Today on Vox Talks Economics, what finance professors could do and what they do do. Welcome to Vox Talks Economics from the Centre for Economic Policy Research. My name's Tim Phillips. Every week we bring you the best new research in economics, so remember to subscribe and follow us as well on Instagram. We don't normally cover the proceedings of the Financial Management Association annual meeting, but last year, Alex Edmonds of the London Business School and CEPR gave a provocative keynote lecture. It's now published as a CEPR discussion paper as well, in which he asked, "What is the purpose of a finance professor?" He joins me now to explain why he asked the question and maybe offer some answers. Alex, welcome.
Thanks, Tim. It's great to be here.
Alex, last time we spoke, it was about how firms define their purpose, which is something that you've studied extensively. Are there parallels with how academics become purposeful as professors?
I think there are, and this is why I naturally gravitated towards an unusual topic for a finance keynote. So let's go back to firms' purpose. Mm-hmm. So what does it mean for a firm to be purposeful? It's to create value for society, even if it's not clear why you might ultimately benefit. So often people think that companies are motivated by profit, but actually a purposeful firm will do things to create social value, even if the link to profit is unclear. And I think the analogy is very close for a finance professor. There might be many things that we do to help our purpose of creating and disseminating knowledge, which might not ultimately benefit us in terms of promotion or salary or academic status. And one example might be teaching. Like, we get our academic standing, we get tenure, we get Google Scholar citations from our publications, not from teaching. But if we think that the purpose of a professor is the creation and dissemination of knowledge, then we will take teaching very seriously.
One of the recommendations that you made that stood out to me is you recommend that academics pursue ideas they're passionate about, not necessarily what's currently popular. But academics need to publish, especially ones at the beginning of their careers. So is it maybe a little bit reckless to suggest this?
That's a really important question. And I think we'll again refer to the earlier talk that we had on companies. Because with companies, actually, what we concluded is that it's not necessarily purpose or profit. In fact, purpose might lead you to be profitable because it leads companies to taking actions that they might not have done otherwise. And we might have come up with the example of Vodafone launching M-Pesa. They did that to solve a social problem of financial inclusion in Kenya, but ultimately they were found a way to monetize that and turn that into a profit. And I think the same is true in terms of academic research, because yes, certainly publication is really important, but if we think about, well, what can I write in order to get it published, the challenge is that you're probably going to be making a small contribution on a really popular area. If instead you're driven by what you're passionate about, then this might be something which is new and might be quite impactful. So when I was and my final year of my PhD, I wanted to look at ESG as a research area, and I started my paper linking employee satisfaction to long-term shareholder returns. Now, it's turned out that ESG is a really popular area, and this is my most cited paper. But at the time, would you advise any PhD student to work on an ESG field? Absolutely not. Nobody was publishing in it. It took me a long time to get that paper published. So it got rejected from two top finance journals. It did manage to get in through in another finance journal, the Journal of Financial Economics, but the road to publication was quite difficult. Had it not been on a topic that I was really passionate about, I might not have wanted to continue with it, particularly after the initial rejections.
Now, some people listening to this, especially those who've had serial rejections, might say, well, that's pretty easy for him to say because he did unconventional research and he got lucky. Do you think you are where you are because you were lucky?
I think I am partly here because I'm lucky. And indeed, in the paper itself, I acknowledge there was a lot of luck in my early research. But, well, why does that then lead to purposes? If indeed the publication outcome is affected a lot by luck, which referee draw that you happen to have, then actually there's not so much of a cost of doing what you are passionate about and what you enjoy. If the publication is affected by a lot of these random factors, then the one thing that you can really affect is this a paper which you are proud of doing, about proud of spending multiple years of your life? I remember that when I handed in my tenure packet at Wharton, this was back in the day in which you had physical copies of papers and they made you stack all of the papers in chronological order. And then when I took these papers and I handed them to the department chair's assistant, I realized that this was the first time I'd held my entire life's work in two hands. And then when I looked at those papers, I realized that I wrote them not to get tenure, not to get approval from external committees, but because I truly cared about those topics. And so I could hand that over with a clear conscience and knowing that I was proud of the work that I'd done in my 5 years at Wharton. Yes, in the end, I ended up getting tenure, and there would have been luck in that decision. Maybe I was lucky with who was invited to be my letter writers. But I can only say, even if that decision had been negative, then I would have been proud of those papers. I think that the impact of papers like the one in employee satisfaction would have been high, even had I not been a tenured professor. That was something which was impactful just because of what the paper happened to be about. And so yes, well, indeed, absolutely, luck has played an important part in my career. I do think this means that we should focus more on the things that we can control. And I think that you can control is, do you work on topics that you really care about?
Another thing that you bring out in the paper is, and I'm quoting from the paper here, we focus too much on disagreements. Our topic area is well known for, how would we say, vigorous debate in many domains. Some people think this is absolutely how it should be. It's clear that perhaps you don't. Are you thinking about refereeing? Are you thinking about the way that seminars are run? Are you thinking about the way that academics are assessed, or how we sometimes don't give enough credit to others? What's your focus here?
I'm afraid the focus is all of the above. So while that might seem a glass half empty view, let me start with the glass half full view, which is disagreement is absolutely an important part of the academic process, right? So people will legitimately find issues with the execution or the methodology of particular papers. And if you're asked to referee, or if you're asked to discuss it at a conference, or if you're in a seminar audience, absolutely, you should say, well, I disagree with how you're doing this. There could be a better way. However, what matters sometimes is the tone with which this gets done. So there is legitimate disagreement, but there have been some conferences where the discussant thinks, if I can just give my discussion in the harshest way possible, I get this reputation of being a scary person and that's good for my overall academic standing, just like a bully at school is somebody to be feared. But I don't think this is a collegial way of acting in the profession. And I think it's not just for conference discussions, but also in seminars. There are some audiences who want to show off in front of their colleagues from asking some very tough questions, but not just a tough question, but a tough question in an aggressive way. But the final thing you touched upon, Tim, I think it's really important, which is giving credit to others. So academia is a profession. We are colleagues in the profession, even though we might not be colleagues at the same institution. But often, if you work in a particular area, let's say ESG, you like to be seen as the only expert in ESG. So you will perhaps denigrate other people's work, or at least not actively acknowledge people's work in this area. And so I think something that we could certainly do much more of as a profession is to recognize other people's work. So sometimes if I just see a really interesting paper, I will tweet about it or post it on LinkedIn. And partly, sometimes that will be selfish in that these might be papers that the Reviewer of Finance has published, and I'm the editor of that. Mm-hmm. But there are sometimes papers published in other journals. So I just recently tweeted something in the Journal of Financial Economics, nothing to do in my field. It was just something very interesting that I found on whether you're Democrat or whether you're Republican will affect whether you're buying houses which are affected by climate change or not. And I thought that's just really interesting, how your political preferences will affect your financial decisions with regard to climate change. And I thought, well, let me just share this on my platform. And I think we can just do that much more generally, is to acknowledge other people's work and to do what we can to disseminate it rather than see each other as rivals.
Something you've already touched on in our conversation is the difference between being recognized for being a good researcher and for being a good teacher. And that's not just about how we think about what good finance, good economics is. It's also the way that the system's set up. Is this a problem?
I think it's a serious problem. I think there's two problems in terms of the rewards of being a good teacher. The first is that even though we have teaching evaluations, they play almost zero effect on your tenure decision. As long as they're above a very low minimum bar, so there's not complaints to the dean's office, there is no difference between being a mediocre teacher and a stellar teacher. In fact, if anything, it could be the opposite. If you're a stellar teacher, people might be concerned that you're raising the bar for everybody else, or maybe you're spending too much time time on teaching, you're not a serious researcher. So I think this is a big concern because, right, who pays our salary? It is the current students or our past students who are now alumni who are donating to our organisation. If you are a management consulting firm and you said your promotion to partner has no relation to what your clients think of you, that would be crazy. Yet for us, one might argue that, well, one part of our client base is the students that we teach. But the second issue is, I think, an even more serious one, is that it's not just not paying attention to the evaluations, but the evaluations themselves are not that meaningful because they might often capture things like popularity or they might capture entertainment value or how easy classes are, not things like how challenging the class is. And when I was at Wharton, they did have this award called Tough, But We'll Thank You in 5 years' Time. And I think those are the sort of things that we should be trying to encourage, is giving difficult classes, not difficult for the sake of being difficult, but things which are actually challenging. And I think one thing which is interesting and also linked to the first part of our conversation is the extent to which you incorporate academic research into the classroom. And why is that useful? Well, number one, we believe that academic research is even more insightful than case studies, because if not, why would we spend so much time doing it? So that's using what we spend most of our life doing and slaving away getting published and dealing with referees. That should something be effective in the classroom. But second, if it shows our students the value of academic research, then maybe they're more willing to fund it in the future. Maybe when they see an academic article and then an article by a consultancy, they will recognise the difference in terms of quality and calibre and so on. And so I think it's good in many, many ways.
To be clear, you continue to teach. You like teaching, don't you? Even though it must be sometimes difficult to squeeze out the time.
Yeah, I love it because the part of why I chose this job, I used to be an investment banker at Morgan Stanley, which is more lucrative in many other ways. But here I get a lot of joy out of teaching my students. I just started my elective on responsible business on Monday, and that I teach 6 hours straight. But what gives me the energy to do that is being able to take a complicated issue, break it down in simple language and explain it, and also just to learn from the students' questions and learn from their own ideas. So I think it's something which gives me a lot of intrinsic joy. Unfortunately, it is something which does not really affect your standing in the profession or whether you get tenure or not.
As a journalist, I'm very interested in your opinion that academics could do more to communicate outside the profession. I'm quoting again from your paper here. The pie will be taken by companies and consultancies who are increasingly releasing sloppy research that claims what practitioners want to hear. Now, anecdotally, I feel that there's something in this in ESG, one of your specialisms here. Nearly all the source material that we use comes from those type of sources, not from academic sources. But what's the solution for this?
This is a really interesting question. And if I had half an hour, I probably could pick apart all the different layers, but I don't. So let me just try and highlight a few really interesting things in what you just asked him. So the first is the idea of claiming what people want to hear. So this is the idea of confirmation bias.
Yeah.
Is that if there's a study which finds something which has an appealing result, it will be shared and liked and tweeted and covered by the media. And interestingly, in ESG, everybody would like to believe that ethical companies do better, and therefore any study which claims this will be widely shared. And so if you're a consultancy and you want to build your brand, then you will release a report which gives that conclusion, even if that conclusion is not actually robust. So one question I like to ask myself is, if the study had found completely the opposite result, would the authors still be willing to publish it? And for a practitioner study, no practitioner would want to publish a paper saying actually ESG doesn't pay off, unethical companies perform better. Whereas an academic, you might be willing to publish that. And indeed, there's a very impactful paper called The Price of Sin by Harrison Hong and Marcin Kaczmarczyk, which finds that sin stocks perform better. And that's just academically very interesting, even though it's not the result that people would like to hear. So with academics, because we sort of have the greater freedom of showing what the data is supporting rather than what we would like to hear, that's why I think there is a lot of more credibility which is given to that. And so then what does that lead to in terms of the first part of your question? I do think we could do much more as a profession to communicate our ideas to a general audience. So how would we do that? first, I think, is to reduce the negative stigma attached to that. So not only is zero weight given to external impact, sometimes it's negative weight which is given. So I know that when I was an assistant professor and I published an article in the Wall Street Journal about executive pay, people were saying, oh, he must be dumbing down his research if it can be translated into the Wall Street Journal for practitioners. So the idea here is that academic research should be so pure and so complicated that the unwashed masses should not be able to touch it. I think this is extremely patronizing, right? The whole idea of doing research is to influence the practice of business. Yes, research does need to be very rigorous. And yes, not every single paper needs to be something that's translatable to a practitioner audience. You will have some pure basic research. But I think if we do something applied, then we should encourage our faculty colleagues to disseminate this. And I think we should actively be rewarding things with impact. Now, the one sort of caveat to that is that if it encourages people to do research, which then has impact because it's sloppy and it feeds into confirmation bias, that's something we don't want to encourage. So unfortunately, there was an academic study done by London Business School, which claimed that diversity improves firm performance. Now, it ran 90 different regressions, zero were significant. And yet, despite having no results, they claimed this in the executive summary. Oh. And this study got widely shared, and these people got very famous. Why? Because this fed into confirmation bias. So we can't just look at blunt measures, like the number of citations in the media, because then it gives you the incentive to be sloppy. But if we are looking at, well, were your articles having impact? And if so, was this based on peer-reviewed articles or something quick and dirty? And I think if it's the former, yes, it should be rewarded. But if it's the latter, we should be careful about that.
As a finance professor who is also a journal editor, do you feel that's part of your role to attract this, how would we say, unpopular research in terms of the conclusions that it finds and try to give it a platform?
Yeah, so I do think it's important as a journal just to publish results based on their scientific accuracy, but plus based on their significance. So by significance, I don't mean finding a significant result in the direction that we want, but working on important topics. So if there were papers which found, for example, that CEOs have no effect on company performance, that would be an important result because lots of people think CEOs are important and that's why they get paid so much. But that's something, again, you would never publish really as a consultancy because no CEO would want to hire you for their firm. But as academics, we have freedom to do this. And so one thing that we've tried to do at the Review of Finance is to look at what the important topics are and to try to encourage research on that. So at the moment, we're doing a special issue on sustainable finance. That's obviously a big topic, but it's also a topic that me, the current editor, and Marcin Kaczmarczyk, who's the next editor, also have expertise in. And so that's also key because academic journals could suffer from the same biases as any newspaper. When something is hot, let's publish on it without the expertise to discern what's rigorous and what's not. We recently ran a special issue on China. That will be, it's already a very important economy, will become even bigger in years to come. Yet so much research is very US focused. And luckily we were able to have two great guest editors, Zhiguo He and Yongshan Wang, who were willing to edit that. And so there we were intentional about trying to publish in those two important areas.
Let's talk about purpose in its biggest form, because finance, it's a channel that we know has potential to help solve a lot of the most important problems in the world. And we're talking about things like climate change or inequality or extreme poverty. Is there potential for academics in finance to be more purposeful by contributing more to solving those problems? How would they do that?
I think there is, and I think they will do this through their research by doing research on these topics. It comes full circle with your first question to do stuff that you're passionate about. I do believe things like climate change and inequality and poverty do get people passionate. There might be reasons why people chose to become finance professors rather than investment bankers, even though the latter might be more lucrative. And I do think part of it is they like the creation and dissemination of knowledge. So people can look at my article and say, well, this seems like really, really idealistic. But I do think it's realistic in a way, in that there was some that nudged you to become a finance professor. It's really easy to lose sight of that and to think about publishing and maybe in order to publish, let me denigrate everybody else who works in this field and so on. But I'm saying, well, let's go back to what made you want to do this to begin with. Just like when you join a new company. Like, you're really excited when you join that company. And then when you start at the company, then things go wrong. So maybe your IT doesn't work, or maybe somebody else gets the promotion. But go back to what made you really excited about joining that company. And I'm saying the same about us in the academic profession. I'm saying it to myself as much as I do to other people. Why, I get papers still rejected all the time. I might have to deal with a particular issue at my school and so on. But if we can hold on to those things that make the profession so rewarding and such a pleasure to be part of, I do think this is something which we can see as more purposeful.
Alex, I think a lot of the Vox Talks audience will be pleased that you made that decision to become a finance professor and didn't stick with the investment banking. Thanks for talking about it today.
Thank you so much for the invitation, Tim.
The paper is called The Purpose of a Finance Professor. Author, of course, Alex Edmonds, and it is discussion paper 16845 at CEPR. This has been a Vox Talk from the Centre for Economic Policy Research. Now, every week we bring you the most important latest research. If you want to discover your purpose or what you're passionate about, subscribe to Vox Talks Economics wherever you get your podcasts. You'll find more than 200 episodes, so whatever type of economics you like, there's going to be a Vox Talk waiting for you.